We only have one item for today. We requested the department to come and brief us on the legislation that needs to be processed or looked at. To give us an idea as to what is it that hampers the work of the department in terms of legislation and our entities. So we're going to have the presentation, and I'm going to ask members to take their notes. Unless it's a point for clarity, that we can interject on a point for clarity. But after the presentation, we will then get an opportunity to engage with the presentation. I haven't received any apologies. Is that?
I've only received an apology from Mr. Chikobo. We're setting another portfolio committee, certainly.
That would be the only apology that we have. Can I hand over to the department to take us through the presentation then? Honorable Foreman?
Just before you do that, I'm not sure why we didn't get this thing to us beforehand, but with us having these black copies and we don't have them, you know, in color, they don't come out quite as well as if we'd had them on our computer. So I'm not too sure why we didn't get a copy sent to us on our computers beforehand.
If the bank doesn't have the answer to that, the officials here will, in their presentation, cover your questions. But, yeah, I would say it is unfortunate that we get it only in the meeting, but there most probably would be a very good, acceptable explanation to that. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the committee members. My name is Mathie Timokolo. I'm the Deputy Director General in the Department of Public Enterprises. I'm responsible for the legal, the governance, and the risk and oversight into the department in respect of all the state-owned companies. I'm joined this morning by my colleague, Sandile Dlamini. He's the chief director, also responsible for legal and governance matters. Apologies from our side from the director general chair. He was called also to attend to the infrastructure in Durban. And as we always say in the department, that being a public servant is that you then respond to the duty and I was given this task today to put this presentation to the committee. Let me also apologize for the presentation from the department, and we only, and from us, the officials really, we only managed to include a few sections of the presentation late last night, Chair. And we could only send it to our office in Cape Town this morning. So we apologize for that, and we also committed that in the future we'll try to work better. With that, Chair, I would like to also just to maybe give an overview of how we're going to cover this presentation and the issues that we'd like to deal with. If Chair will recall, we received two requests from the committee. Previously, the committee wanted the department to come and provide just a reflection on the performance of the state-owned companies stemming out of the annual reports which were tabled in Parliament last year. And we were also requested to come and give a legislative and policy challenges faced by the department. Now, Chair, the latter part of the presentation that deals with the legislative and policy challenges, one of the things that we omitted to put into the presentation relates to specific of the mandate of the department and our legislative process. And this is as a result of the interaction with the Presidential Review Committee. We have shared with this House before our views around the constraint on the department's mandate being as a result of lack of statutory provisions and legislation that embed and entrench our mandate. Subsequent to the discussion with the PRC, the PRC raised a concern that the department should not run a parallel process with what they are doing, because they are looking exactly at the role of the state as a shareholder, regulator, policymaker, and a funder. And to the extent that what DPE would like to put in the form of a legislation would be really covered, they requested that we hold our process in abeyance until the end of March. We understand that's when they will be submitting their recommendation to the president. And so what we agreed to do in the meantime is that we will then hold the process of putting a legislation in respect of our state-owned companies and the department in abeyance. But what we will do as the department, because we still have to function, we will then have to work on entrenching our mandate through a process of a proclamation, because either way, you are going to require some kind of a formal some kind of a constitution of the department. So, Chair, that's how far we are in terms of entrenching and invading the mandate of the department. We anticipated that the process of the proclamation, we would come and brief the committee once we've made headway, because we're still busy investigating. And that means we have to go back to the history of the department, because it started as an office of privatization, to look in terms of when those the SOEs that we have in our in our portfolio, when they were transferred, what were the terms and how, and so those are the things that we will be working. So I thought I needed to bring that to the fore, so that when we deal with the legislative and policy challenges, we have restricted ourselves to those that are the legislation that has been presented from other departments, how they affect our state-owned companies, and how they affect the department, actually, and shared with the committee as well. Our views in terms of how the committee can help us to unlock some of those policy challenges. One piece of legislation that we will be putting and will take the committee through is the Aventura Resource Act, because we need to come to the committee to repeal that act at some point. So I thought I just need to start with that aspect first, Chair. Then, Chair, if you allow me and the committee indulge me, I would like to go, and this would be just a quick sign-offs in terms of the audit that were conducted by the department. And I use the word audit carefully, because what we were doing is that we were going through the annual reports and picking up the governance challenges that the state-owned companies experience. So the essence with this part of the presentation is to share with the committee the sign-offs of that review and the outcomes that stemmed out of the annual report submitted to Parliament, our views on some of the challenges that faced by the state-owned companies and that led to those governance lapses, and just to provide an assurance to the committee as well that we have taken appropriate corrective measures both within the department and also in the state-owned companies, and we'll share with the committee some of those. And but also we want to share with the committee that where we've noted instances where the SOCs have done well and they have excelled in certain areas, we've communicated those to the chairpersons and to the management of the SOCs, and where there are shortcomings, we have identified and highlighted them, and we've requested the SOCs to come back and just identify how they will be dealing with those shortcomings. Now, what I would like to start with is just to, and probably maybe to reiterate, Chair, and we've presented so much to the committee in terms of our oversight function that I don't want to repeat some of the issues. But what I wanted to bring to the fore, because you'll see also how it aligns to our corrective measures, is the SOC's board are always reminded that they are accountable to the shareholder ministers. And this relationship operates through corporate law. And the our governance and processes and system by which we govern the SOEs are really directed at holding the SOC boards and their that accountable to their stakeholders, being parliament, customers, employers, employees, and lenders. And this is important, the Chair, we will realize, and I think the committee is already aware that some of the, out of the audit and the financial statements and the reports of the state-owned companies, there were a lot of unhappiness from sectors of the stakeholders. And as a department, we entrenched that with the SOC boards, that they cannot be seen as being accountable only to the Department of Public Enterprises. They've got a wider stakeholder base. And what we expect as the shareholder from the board, we expect them to report on their controls. They need to inform the department of the sufficiency of their resources, the business plans, and their performance. And this is becoming an issue where we find ourselves that the information that is submitted to the shareholder in most of the cases does not deal adequately with the resources and the constraints that the SOCs face, and we learn with, about this at the time when we had to step in and provide interventions at the last minute. And so we've requested the board that they also need to evaluate their performance against the outcomes of the shareholder compact, and this is important, Chair. You'll see. Today is the 28th of Feb, is the day on which, in terms of the PFMA, all the state-owned companies are to submit their corporate plans. It is the due date. What we've requested in the office is that by close of business today, we want to see how many of them have complied, because we've already sent letters to the beginning of the year reminding them that no extension, no exemption will be considered under no circumstances. So, and in those, we want to align their performance in the shareholder compact and the corporate plan. And we also, as a shareholder, expect the SOCs to apply government policies consistently across the SOCs. And this is also another issue that we picked up through our review of the 2010-2011 performance of the SOCs, that some policies are not applied consistently. And the, most of the time, the SOCs will also give the explanations being the dynamics of the environments within which they operate. We also wanted the SOCs to ensure that they have strong, independent, and adequately skilled executive management to oversee and supervise their business operations. And this is important, Chair, because, again, as a shareholder, we recognize the delineation of roles between the shareholder, the board, and management. But at the same time, we believe that as a shareholder, you need a board that can be able to appoint the strong leadership and be able to hold that leadership to account to the board. This diagram is familiar to your committee, but the reason why I'm putting it up is because, as I mentioned, that today is the last day for the submission of the corporate plan. And where we are really at is that we followed this to the core, and I'm proud to report that the SOCs have begun to embrace this logical planning and monitoring framework. And it really started with the intergovernmental consultations. We've consulted, for example, around the issues of DNL. We've consulted with the National Treasury. We've consulted with DOD. So it starts as an intergovernmental consultation process. And then what follows then is that as a department, out of those consultations, we develop the strategic intent, which, amongst others, covers those four areas that I mentioned in the previous slide, dealing with the shareholder expectations. And based on that, the board goes back and we negotiated the shareholder compact, which is required in terms of the regulation 29 of the treasury regulations. Then the corporate plan comes, which is due today. And then once the corporate plan has been submitted, we do what we call a performance monitoring as a department, because then we would have to measure the strategic intent and the corporate plan in terms of the shareholder compact and those targets. So we perform our function then in terms of we use the dashboard to make sure that there's consistent information that is provided to the department. We deal with issues of information asymmetry. We analyze the quarterly reports, and we also provide investor briefs which are aligned to the SOC's annual reports. And then lastly, we go through the annual general meeting, which then it's just a meeting that takes the board and the minister through the reflections of the year, what has happened, what they have achieved, and if they have not achieved, what have been the variables and what are the reasons for non-achievement. This slide is just a narration of the previous the diagram, but what I want to bring to the attention of the committee is just the just what is written at the bottom there. That so if you look at the logical monitoring framework, it is clear that the shareholder compact must first be in place before the corporate plan can be prepared, and this we is important, because then we use the corporate plan to demonstrate how the key performance areas and indicators in the shareholder compact will be achieved. For us, we term this as an implementation plan. And what we have done, if I may share with the committee as well, is that we have included in terms of some of the key performance indicators and KPIs, is one of the things that has been bothering us, and it's been an issue, is the remuneration of executives and the boards within state-owned companies. So with this 2012 compact going forward, we've included provisions relating to the alignment of the CEO performance and the performance of the state-owned company and the performance of the board. So we've started putting those in. We've communicated to the state-owned companies, and we hope that the final process, when we finalize the remuneration guideline, will be able then to give a holistic perspective of how we would be managing remuneration in the state-owned companies. This slide I'll touch quickly, and the relevance of this slide is that SOCs are governed by and large by the Public Finance Management Act, in addition to the other legislation. But they are also required to submit their annual performance reports together with the annual financial statements within 2 months. Why I'm bringing that up is that we, with our assessment of the 2010-2011 AGMs, we realized that there were some SOEs who were not able to comply with that. The reasons vary, really, and then when we go through the other slides, we will be able to talk to some of those in detail. Now, Chair, I just want to move then to the internal controls. What are these governance lapses that we picked up? We also picked up the issues relating to submission of the annual reports and the annual financial statements, which are required to be submitted within 6 months from the financial year end. And this has to be tabled to the annual general meeting for approval by the shareholder. Some of them we approved outside the required prescripts of the Companies Act because they were submitted late to the shareholder. Our review of the 2011 audit indicated some poor outcomes of the SOCs, and some of this were evident through their financial management. They had poor audits, and poor audits in terms of both the internal audit and the external audit function, and serious governance challenges in terms of compliance. So we are, as a shareholder, concerned with this non-compliance and these challenges arising from the annual report. And most of them, as I said, they are around non-compliance with the legal and regulatory prescripts. some lack of internal controls, inadequate information that is provided to the auditors, which then also is an inadequate information that is provided to the boards for assessment. We've also picked up fruitless and wasteful expenditure issues and some information that has been submitted late even to the Auditor General. We've also picked up supply chain management audit findings, and this related to irregular procurement practices by and large, where there would be deviations from procurement practices, where some of the information provided to the boards, the relevant board subcommittees like your tender committees, your finance committees, they were not really up to the standards. We've also picked up poor contract management. That's where just the SOCs, they don't have adequate systems for contract management, and sometimes the contractual and negotiations find that they are weak to the extent that they expose the SOCs to onerous provisions in the contracts. We've also picked up issues where the auditors have raised emphasis of matters, and again, these are issues of where the issues relating to the going concerns and the guarantees that are due to expire, they are not brought to the attention of the board timely so that there could be proper engagement with National Treasury. And again, this for us then talks to the lack of the relationship between the internal and external auditors. We've also picked up deficient management structures and high vacancy rate at the senior level. And one of the things as a shareholder that we picked up is that in most cases, we are not provided information on resignation of senior executives in time. And most of the time when we learn about it is when it's either the CEO has already left, or he's just serving notice a few days, and then the company will be left without a CEO. We've also picked up incoherencies, both at the board and management levels. And this, Chair, it's really talks to issues of tension between the boards and the CEOs. And very often in our opinion is that there are no early warning signs to the shareholder to say the relationship is not healthy. By the time we learn about it, it's really at the time where it has irretrievably broken down. And I think we've had some of our state-owned companies that are already involved in arbitration between the CEO, where the CEO has taken the matter to the CCMA or the Labour Court against the board. And inevitably then, we as the shareholder, in most cases when these things go to court, we are then joined in, and we find that the department, we find ourselves at a disadvantaged position, because then, as I said earlier on, no early warning signs to us to say there are problems. We've also picked up issues in terms of delays in finalization of the shareholder compact, and this then affects and impacts on that logical and monitoring framework, because if immediately one leg of the monitoring framework is not adhered to, it has an impact in terms of when the corporate plan would be submitted. It's got an impact on the AGMs, and in most cases then you find ourselves having to condone late submission of the AGM packs or notification to the shareholder. Again, we've picked up that where there were clear planned targets, some of them were not met, and this related to financial, operational, some HR and socioeconomic and safety issues. So what we've done also with the 2012 compact, we said the fact that a state-owned company has not achieved its planned target, it does not necessarily mean you have to retain the same. You can still have to up the bar. And that is, we want to use that as a punitive measure, so that you don't have a situation where they come back every time not having achieved their targets and it's being rolled over the years. Now, all these issues then talks to risk management. We find that if the department is not adequately informed of the impending or emerging risk, then what happens is that this information most of the time is divulged through the media, or it's at the time when the SOCs are called before the committee, and then they then also divulge information which they had not checked with the shareholder upfront, and then that really makes us a shareholder that sits back and reacts. And we also picked up that the issues relating to risk management strategies that are outlined in the report that are not adequate. And this talks mainly to the management of the build programs, especially with regards to ESCOM and Transnet. Inadequate financial disclosures and the board heavy reliance on management without really verification of information that has been submitted. So this also we've taken up with the board. That the quality of information that is submitted to the board really needs to hold management accountable. And but also then the question is how do we manage this reputation risk to government? As I said, we are really now robustly ensuring that there's that alignment between the targets as contained into the targets, the executive performance, and as somebody said in the department, maybe probably you need to hit where it hurts most, and when you link this to, and then the performance will be evident in terms of the shareholder compact, and that will be your criteria, nothing else. And then we also have to deal with those negative issues that emanate from the reports and the financial losses, and then say, should those be picked up by the auditors, then they should be triggers of non-performance in the compact. Again, there's issues relating to the misalignment between the SOC quarterly reporting, their annual financials, their AGM pact, and the final annual report. And this is becoming, last year with the AGMs, it was a serious issue because, again, now with the department, we had to sit back and compare from the quarterly report, the information that has been submitted with the quarterly report. You find that when you go through the draft annual financials, the AGM pact and the final annual report, there's such inconsistency. And so what we have done is that there has to be measures in terms of why the information that is submitted to the dashboard is consistent, and where there has to be deviations, then the department will need to report in at an early stage. Issues relating to the condonation of the late submission, we find that we receive a lot of those requests. With the 2012 AGM, we've already started communicating to the company secretaries that this is one behavior that will not be condemned for the 2012. This as well hampers our ability as a technical team to adequately prepare the minister, the deputy minister, and the AG, the DG to prepare for the AGM. There have been instances where we have postponed the AGM because the quality of information we could not put it before the minister for approval. And then, again, this has a spillover effect in that then the tabling of the reports to your committee, to parliament, then it becomes affected. So then, Chair, what is it that we have done in the meantime to address all this? We have strengthened, the minister has strengthened the appointment of boards and board committees, and we have been strict in terms of ensuring compliance with both the Companies Act and the PFMA in this regard. In terms of the new legislation, the Companies Act has transferred the appointment of the Audit and Risk Committee to the shareholder. So this is one of the shareholder reserved rights in terms of the new Act, and we have taken advantage of this in terms of appointment of the Audit and Risk Committee members, and also put specific requirements aligned with the Act to ensure the quality and the qualifications of the members who sit on that committee. And we've brought the Auditor General closer to the department in terms of consultation with the for the appointment of the Risk and Audit Committee, and we've also ensured that the SOCs, they comply in terms of appointment of auditors with that. We have formalized the process. And as I said earlier on, we send a letter at the beginning of every year reminding the SOCs that they need to submit their corporate plans by the 28th of Feb. And in this case, we also want to we bring the National Treasury closer to engage with them on the corporate plan. And as I said earlier on, we have made it clear that we will not provide really condonation in this case. There had to be real good reasons for condonation of the late submission. As I said earlier on, we've picked up that there's this relationship between the internal and external auditors. We've engaged the board in terms of appointment and of the internal auditors, and in this case also recognizing that it is not the shareholder reserve matter to appoint internal auditors, but we have put in mechanisms in terms of the kind of information that should be provided to the department when appointing internal auditors. And we also want assurance in terms of the review of the reliability of the information that the auditors would give us comfort that they would ensure compliance, that SOC comply with the policies, the procedures, and the laws and regulations. So we're no longer only leaving it to the board, but we also want the internal auditors to come to the party. We have formalized also in more detail now the submission of the quarterly reports to the department and the monitoring of mega projects. As I said, we've started with Medupi and Kusile, and as well as around the Transnet with the locals. We have communicated, ministers have communicated with clear intent with the board that there will be an independent board evaluation going forward in the 2012 AGM. What we've learned with the 2010-2011 assessment is that some of the associates, they never did a board independent board evaluation. The board evaluated themselves, and you don't get much comfort in terms of the dynamics within the board. So we've insisted on an independent board evaluation, and the report should be submitted to the department for assessment. And then also we want that board evaluation to deal and provide a clear role clarification and accountability between the board, the chairperson, as well as the subcommittees. We've also formalized the board induction process, and where the department conducts its own board induction, where minister communicates with clear intent to the board, then the board cannot say they don't understand the minister or the shareholder expectations. Again, we've realized that communication has been a problem, so we need to improve on channels of communication. And again, where we came short as the department is that the SOCs, the department also, in terms of decision-making process, we take long. So we've improved on that, especially around the 30-day turnaround time for PFMA applications. But also what the department and the minister has done, there are strategic monthly meetings between minister and the chairperson and the DG and the CEOs, as well as reinstituted the chairperson's forum, where it's the meeting with minister with all the chairpersons of the SOCs and their SOEs. We've also reinstituted what we call the governance and risk forum, where we sit and go through all the governance issues with the company secretaries and the legal people, and to look at the risks up front. We've also formalized the structured engagement with the Auditor General now as the department. We've got standing meetings with the AG. We also have standing meetings, which at least happens twice per year, between the Auditor General, the Minister, and the chairpersons of the Audit and Risk Committee, because at least we believe that with the AG and the Audit and Risk Committee, we are able to understand the dynamics within the board, what the SOCs are facing in terms of compliance and the audit and risk issues. Again, we will have regular interactions now with the National Treasury. There's also the DG and the ministerial bilaterals, and these are aimed mainly to address the bottlenecks with this, our sister departments, and also to ensure that there's alignment with the policy departments. And at official level, we also have what we call steering meetings and steering committee meetings, just to make sure that we assist the SOCs in unlocking some of their challenges. With that, Chase, just brings us to the end of our presentation on the issues of the governance and SOE lapses. I'm not if Chair wants us to discuss that, or we should go to the next session where we deal with the legislative processes.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. I will be covering the presentation relating to issues of challenges arising from policy and legislation. The first point that we would like to deal with relates to the Integrated Coastal Management Bill. This bill seeks to amend the Integrated Coastal Management Act, which 2008. This act was passed to manage environmental issues relating to coastal land. The bill was issued by the Department of Environmental Affairs in September 2011, and as I say, it was aimed at amending the existing legislation. Why we are raising it at this stage, although it has not been introduced in Parliament, is because of its impact, and also just to take this opportunity to bring it to the attention of the Portfolio Committee, so that by the time it perhaps is introduced, they would be aware of its implications to us, unless the representations that are made by the department and our SOC are not taken into account by ensuring that the bill is amended accordingly. The issues, in fact, were raised initially when the Act itself was before the Act was promulgated, but unfortunately they were not taken into account. But the good thing that happened is that the legislation was, there are certain provisions which gave rise to concerns were not put into operation, so they were excluded from operation at the time when the Act was promulgated. And now those provisions are being amended so that the whole Act could be put into effect. But what we have noticed is that the proposed amendments do not address the issues that were raised by the department and the SOC concerned. What are the issues then? The issues, in fact, that we are concerned about, what is discernible from the bill is that it fails to align or perhaps balance, to strike a balance between management of national environment and the transnet commercial imperatives. Furthermore, the bill fails to align the ICM Act, which is the Integrated Coastal Management Act, and other legislation that exists, for example, the Seashore Act, Legal Succession Act, Kuha Act, and National Ports Act. So if you read it, there is no alignment in the sense that it fails to recognize certain rights that Transnet has over the coastal land, and particularly the ports. What is happening is that the composition of the coastal public property, there is a definition for it. Coastal public property, by its definition and also the ownership of it, rests in the state. The issue then is, if the ports are included in the coastal public property, then the problem arises in the sense that some of the assets that are currently belonging to Transnet may be transferred to the state. The only part that has been excluded is the land that is above the high water mark. But we are arguing that that creates a very serious problem in the sense that it's not consistent with the old regime of ownership of immovable property. Immovable property accedes to the land and is owned by one person from the land to wherever point it ends. But in this instance, you would find that the portion of the land that is below the water mark, that is in fact submerged by water, would belong to the state, whilst the part of that property that is above the water mark is owned by the Transnet. And that's creating a problem, and it's a new thing that is introduced in the ownership of land. The recommendation that we have made to DIA, because we have made a representation, is that the immovable structure, which within the ports, should be excluded. and that would protect the ownership of the land and also the balance sheet of Transnet, which if that does not succeed, then a big portion of land that currently belongs to Transnet would be transferred to the state, and that would affect their covenants, existing covenants. There is also an issue about reclamation of land. Reclamation of land is when you perhaps reclaim land from the sea. And according to the bill now, as it stands, it suggests that once you reclaim land from the sea, that land would belong to the state. And Transnet is doing that in their business. It's part of their operation. They would reclaim land from the sea. What we have suggested, which has partly been taken into account, is that perhaps that the reclaimed land should belong to Transnet if Transnet did reclaim that land. What has the definition done now is to say that the reclaimed land will be registrable in terms of the DITS Act, but it fails to acknowledge that once that land is registered in the name of Transnet, then it will belong to Transnet. It still suggests that it would belong to the state, and that's another challenge that we have with the bill. There is also a prohibition relating to activities aimed at preventing or promoting erosion or accretion of the seashore. What is happening, Transnet would move sand in order to prevent erosion, or it will also extend structures to combat erosion. So this is prohibited, and the argument is that if this is prohibited and it's an offense in terms of the legislation, then Transnet's operations would be seriously affected by that. And we are then suggesting that perhaps the activities that are allowed in terms of the National Ports Act should be excluded from the prohibition. And that's the recommendation. Those are the major issues that we are raising with regard to them, although there are others which we have raised with the Department of Environmental Affairs. And we will be also welcome invite by the Portfolio Committee once the legislation is introduced in Parliament to come and present if the bill is not changed to take the shape we would like to see it taking. Nonetheless, for now, the bill will be making its way to Parliament, and we just want the Portfolio Committee to perhaps note the concerns that we have with the bill so that when it's introduced in Parliament and our concerns have not been addressed, the Portfolio Committee could assist us in terms of seeing that the operations of Transnet and its ownership over structures in the ports is not adversely impacted. I will then proceed to deal with another challenge that we have, this one arising or relating to broadband infraco, and in fact it relates to not to a legislation but to a decision based perhaps on policy which is impacting adversely on infraco. Infraco has a statutory mandate to expand the availability and affordability of access to electronic communication, that is broadband connectivity. The purpose is just to ensure that there is access in rural areas, and also there is reduction in the price of, paid by people to access broadband. In terms of its legislation, Infraco should be issued with two licenses, Electronic Communication Network Services License and Electronic Communication Services. What has happened is that the first one has been issued, but Electronic Communication Services License has not been issued, and a decision was taken in 2010 that license should not be issued. We are concerned about the implications of that, in that it will make it virtually impossible for Infraco to achieve its developmental and strategic objectives. The way forward for us was perhaps to request that ICASA issue a conditional license. One other thing that has happened, we have forced a partnership with Centec. But we believe, and we still maintain, that a license should be issued to Infraco for it to be able to carry out its mandate. Well, the other issue then, which is of concern to us, which it has been, in fact, thanks to the Minister of Finance, has been partly addressed in the sense that this procurement, preferential procurement policy framework regulations were issued, and the aim was to have those regulations coming into effect on the 7th of December 2011. The good thing that happened is after representations made by SOEs, SOCs, and the department, the the department, the Minister of Finance kindly agreed to postpone the implementation of those regulations. But we thought it was still critical that we make the committee aware, because there is only a suspension for now, for about a year, and the intention may, we are not too sure what will happen after that suspension. In fact, it's delayed for a year. It may be implemented at the end of this year again. So what the implications are for this is that currently the SOCs, when they implement transformation, economical transformation, through tender process, they would consider ownership and management of black people, and also award pots for management ownership of females, and also grant points for ownership by disabled people. This, we believed, was the most effective way of implementing economical transformation. In terms of the regulation, they are introducing broad-based BEE status level of a contributor as a criterion upon which points would be granted. And we find that is based on the achievements in terms of the codes based, in terms of the broad-based economic, in terms of the broad-based BEE. So we'll find that although they take into account the seven principles, you'll find that we will fail to distinguish and perhaps grant more points to black-owned, female-owned, and businesses owned by disabled people. And we believed that it would impact adversely on transformation. Further, Transnet, for example, and Eskom may have to acquire or procure some of their goods and services from foreign companies. And if this was strictly to be applied without any flexibility, Transnet would be will not be able to carry out its mandates, and so would be Eskom. So we suggested to finance, as I said, kindly the minister kindly accepted our representation and delayed this, but should it come back end of this year, then we would have serious problems. We are raising it to the portfolio committee so that perhaps there would be some way that they would assist us in case the matter raises its head or during the process of the suspension. The last issue that we would like to raise with the portfolio committee relates to Aventura Limited. Sometime, I think 2002, the cabinet took a decision to have Aventura wound up. In fact, since then it has stopped operating. All that it does now is just to wind up its affairs and also to dispose of its assets. Substantial land or immovable assets have been disposed of, but there are still others that still need to be disposed of. The department is in the process of initiating the liquidation. Once the liquidation is finalized and the company is deregistered, then the legal process would commence. And what that legal process would entail, it would entail the repeal of the Aventura Resorts Act. And that's where the committee would come in to assist in having that legislation repealed. And it would be not unnecessary to have that legislation after the company is deregistered or liquidated. And according to our plan, we are hopeful that we'll be able to commence that process last quarter of this financial year. Failing last quarter, then it will be first quarter of 2013-14 financial year. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think we will now invite members to interact with the presentation. Whilst I'm looking for my answer. Honorable Mane, Honorable Mukwela, Honorable Bowman, Ololo, Santa, Honorable Kuranov, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to come to the last slide about Aventura. Has a date been set in terms of a time frame when the last assets would be dispersed off? Is there a 6 month period, a 12 month period? Is there a time frame for this to be done?
So we go that way.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Three quick questions. Let me start with the bottom one, related actually to Honorable Marek's question. We have Insurer Resource Act. Now, we know that our Insurer, there's a decision to have it wound up in 2002. I'm trying to compare it with the PBMR. In terms of human resources, what has happened to the people, the employees of Aventura, and what compensation procedure was followed to ensure that there would be no repercussions from the trade union point of view when it's already done? I'm trying to make an extraneous comparison also with the Transnet Benefit Fund. We're trying to avoid a situation where we close up things and then only to be faced with a ghost again, imagine in future. So it's a multi-pronged question. I would like more elaboration on how the insurer has been run up. I heard the presentation, the presenter making a reference to the asset, et cetera, et cetera, but there's a human capital there.
Yeah.
What has happened to the human capital? That's number one. Number two, I must say that the presenters have done a very good job. I was scratching my head and saying, how are they going to handle this one, the presentation, but they're clearly well-equipped. I want to find out if there's no dissonance between the PFMA and the Companies Act,
okay,
as far as SOEC is concerned. Because in my mind, there could be some perceptual conflict. If there's no, how dare be? As long as there's assonance there. In other words, the provisions of the PFMA talk to those of the Companies Act.
Not clash with the companies.
Yeah, number the last one would relate to what now? It would relate to Chairperson. Are there any legal cases pending on DPE as such? Quite apart from the SOCs themselves, as you speak now.
Honorable Pong.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think let me pick up on the. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think you've given us a pretty good idea of where there are problems and how you're trying to address those. If I could just pick up on the question of, you know, you say that having identified the problems and the weaknesses, particularly out of the ARs, and using the example of the submission of corporate plans by today, the 28th, what is your strategy now if people do not submit that? I know you're saying you're not condoning anymore, but what, you know, what power, what strength do you have to make sure that, you know, if they don't comply, that you've got something strong enough in place to ensure that that does happen? And then perhaps I would also like to just raise, you know, at the source of, I believe, probably all of our problems is the correct people in the right places. And fully qualified. What is your role as a department to ensure that we have the correct people? You know, do you have any input in that? Is there any way in which you can assist with that? And then I think you're only allowing three questions at the moment. If I could then pick up on the independent board evaluation. Who would make up that body of people that would form the independent? part of that evaluation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also join my colleagues to thank DPE for the presentation. In fact, you picked up on a number of issues on some of the SOCs and interventions thereof. I just wanted to get clarity on the question of the risk management strategies that are not outlined in the SOC's report. As to what measures or interventions do you, as DPE, employ to ensure that these strategies are outlined in their reports? In fact, with the audit and the risk committees, were they in place before, or they were not in place? In that now I realize that we are going to intervene to ensure that these audit and risk committees are in place now. That will be the first one. The second one would be on the coastal property. I just want to get clarity on the question, for instance, of the V&A and water funds, because we know that it was bought by some companies from overseas with BEE shareholders and all that. I just want to get now, currently, what is the situation around that one? Was that the first one? The second one is on the broadband infra.
It was the second.
It was the second.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, you still have one.
Okay, still have good one. On the broadband infra, you know, this question of broadband infra has been dragging for quite a long time now. What is the holdup? If you could just appraise us as this committee. Because really we are in the dark. We don't know what's going on. What is the holdup on the issue now of the ECS license? Thank you very much.
You have another one?
Yeah, I too have one. And then...
because you are my friend.
Because, yeah, we're friends. Yeah. And then, Chair, thank you for your indulgence. On the question of the PVM... Oh, no. Oh, Honorable Mokwena has asked that one. What is the time frame to wind up that entity completely? And are there any assets that are still there? Yes. Can you just update us on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the presentation gives us an idea of how the department seeks to intervene. My question, on the basis of you having detected some of these issues at a very late stage, an example is an example are relationships between CEOs and boards. What does that say to your capacity as the legal unit within the department? That is the first one. The second one, one would align that with independent board evaluators. One would want to understand whether that would be an internal exercise, but when you say independent, it would suggest that you would be outsourcing. Is that the case? Following that, there's a litany of pending litigations against either the minister or the department. And we are not appraised as to where are these going. What impact do they have, or what bearing do they have in the department as they are standing? The last one, Chairperson, would be the Aventura thing. What relief would the winding up of Ventura bring to the government when you look at the legal debacle that Aventura and what is this other one? Mikanto Properties are involved in. And where does that put the what's name the department? I'll stand there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for a very informative presentation, both on the government governance lapses and the policy challenges. I think it's very informative, but also very clear. The highlights that you've given this committee. My first question is the if just to take a bird's eye view, if you stand back and you look at the size of the 8 state-owned entities that you oversee, I mean, it's huge. The economic activities that they produce, the contribution they make to GDP of this country. If you just take the top 4. I think we will be surprised to see what percentage to economic activity they contribute. At the same time, if I look at the size of your department in the budget that was tabled last Wednesday, and your diminishing budget, your relatively small department in terms of personnel, my question is, how do we get the two together? Do you have the capacity and the resources to really be very effective in the oversight of what you presented to us of the SO state-owned companies? Just tell us whether you're comfortable in the next year, medium-term expenditure framework period, that you're really in control and you will be able to handle this oversight role very effectively. Because the challenges that you list here are massive, not of your own doing, but because of just the way the economy grows, the SOEs expand and change. It's never the same. You can't predict. So that's my first question. Whether you have the capacity and the resources to effectively oversee these 8 state entities. That's my first question. Number two, you referred to a misalignment by the state companies on quarterly reporting, the draft annual financials, the AGM, back the final annual report. Now, we already 18 years into the new democracy. How can we still have a misalignment from state-owned entities after such a long period of experience and learning curves and lessons learned? I really don't understand unless I miss something. Third question. This Integrated Coastal Management Act or bill that is now coming to Parliament, we know about it. You've alerted this committee before about this problem, especially as it affects the ports, Transnet, and it has, you're absolutely correct, it has massive implications for Transnet. I mean, if I understand the coastal Integrated Coastal Management Act correctly, all coastal public property belongs to the public, and it overrides the fact that the state, if I remember the definition correctly, but you say no, the ownership rests in the state. But the fact of the matter, if our ports are included in the coastal property, public property, it is a massive implication for Transnet. If you talk about the reclamation of land and the prohibition of activities, and your recommendation that it must be excluded from prohibition, that is similarly a massive implication. application for Transnet. And Transnet is one of the public entities that needs to embark on a massive infrastructure rollout. This is a serious issue that you put in front of us. So I need an unpacking from your side. Where is this bill at the moment? Has it passed the stages of public hearings? You say it's coming to Parliament. It's not coming to this committee. It's coming to the Portfolio Committee of probably Environmental Affairs. So just tell us where this process is. Otherwise, we have to find out. And whether there's hearings, whether there's only a voting on the bill, passing through Parliament, and just your negotiations as DPE with the Department of Environmental Affairs. Have you really exhausted your negotiation? And do you tell us this morning that this is now final? Whatever you can do is a bonus as this portfolio committee, but you've done your utmost. The die is cast. It's gone. It's coming to Parliament. Or are you telling us there's still a door open, either department to department, or executive member to executive member, or portfolio committee to portfolio committee? Because, Chairperson, depending on that answer, we need to evaluate whether what role do we have to play. Whether we want to have a joint meeting with Environmental Affairs, whether we want to have a further briefing on this issue. But this issue as it stands, I hear you and I agree with you, as a huge implication for Transnet going into the future. I thank you.
Thank you. I think let's get responses to those ones. We will see if we still have time for a second round of questions. Maybe what you could do is just to add to you, your interventions so far, how do you feel about this? Do these bear any fruit? Are they really showing the results that you expect? And what is the role of, because it's the minister, the DG, the CEOs, and so on, and also the chairpersons forum, or whatever you call it, the chairpersons of the party. The DGs are assigned different divisions and so on. What are their role in these interventions?
Thank you, Chair. Let me just start right with that, respond to that question. I think one, probably maybe when you talk about DPE and its oversight function, is that we do nothing else but we are a shareholder department. Now, everything else that we've been putting into the department has related to its systems, its frameworks, its guidelines, and sometimes the state-owned companies, they adhere fully with them, sometimes they would not, and they would choose not to really where to comply if there's other legislative impediment, and for example, if our guidelines on the appointment of CEOs would contradict the provisions of the Companies Act. They would say legislation takes precedence. So what we have done in terms of effecting this our intervention is that all the frameworks and interventions are legislation related. We make sure first and foremost that we as the department are compliant. Then they have no reason to say they cannot comply because we ourselves are compliant with the legislation. So the intervention by the department through the ministry would be based on the legal prescripts. Minister would not act outside the law. So then our interventions, I would say, they've been very effective in a sense that where we have introduced measures and where we have held the board accountable through this open dialogue, we're beginning to see an improvement. But we still have some way to go, given the fact that the SOEs operate within a highly regulated environment. And there was a question around the alignment and harmony between the PFMA and the Companies Act. Yes, it is still a challenge in a sense that there are certain provisions that you feel that for state-owned companies, because the Companies Act does not take into account the developmental mandate, and these are state-owned companies that you want to use them to for developmental objectives. So our role as the shareholder, the interventions that we bring must be able to strike a healthy balance that they comply, but at the same time, there is developmental objectives. So our interventions are aimed at that, and at this point in time, they are effective. There are gaps because the evolution process of a shareholder function is still ongoing. This reform is still ongoing. And hence this exercise that we did of doing an analysis of the 2010-2011 AGMs and say what went wrong so that we make sure that going forward they are not going to be repeated. Then, Chair, there was also a question around, and this is a very critical question around the size of the department, the budget. We are a very lean department. The process that we have done as a department in terms of global trends and benchmarking is that shareholder function is a highly capacitated function. It requires skill, highly skilled, because all that you're doing is that you should be able to direct the state-owned companies. But they have resources. They are able to bring in consultants, so you should be able to analyze these reports that they provide to you. So we are constrained as a department, and we did share this with the committee the last time. We have challenges in terms of being in the public service as well, the attracting and retaining the right caliber of individuals within the department is a challenge. We have in the past tried to put measures into place, and it was part of our legislative process where we wanted the department to be looked at in the similar light as yourself, that you have the same autonomous authority, and you are allowed to some extent to operate outside the public service if you are to attract in terms of remuneration, because we believe that the space where we're at it's very challenging and dynamic. So really we are constrained in the department. As DG shared with the committee the last time, yes, our budget has been reduced. We're looking at other alternatives in terms of what can we do to strengthen the capacity within the department. And if we look at the infrastructure build, and if we look at the state of the nation's address in terms of the role that our state-owned companies would be playing in infrastructure development, we've taken note of that, and we're working in terms of plans. How can we look at other alternatives of bringing resource in the department? Litigation against the department and the minister and the impact to the department. I think in responding to this, one needs to go back a little bit into the history of the department. When the department was convened as an office of privatization, again, the skill and the nature of the job that needed to be conducted in the department was a challenge. So the department relied heavily on consultants, relied heavily on external lawyers. But there were no people who are to follow up on those privatization processes. As a result, the contracts and the manner in which the department committed itself exposed the department. And that was followed by a number of litigations. We had litigations that stemmed from 2002 that went on for a number of years, because some of the privatizations, they were not handled properly. Some of them, when the department would renege on some of the commitments, then they would be sued and the minister would be joined. But with our interventions, we've introduced what we call also the alternative dispute resolutions, where we've looked at the cases where we don't need to go litigation. Which ones can we settle and which ones we can pursue, because legislation is costly. I can announce to the committee that we only have two cases left that are pending in the department, and both of them, they are at the arbitration process. One, we believe, will be dealt with without going to court, and the other one we're still doing an assessment, and the negotiations between the parties are going. So we have reduced the backlog of litigation tremendously in the department. If you look at since 2008, we've not had new litigation in the department. So what we're dealing with currently is legacy issues, and we've reduced that backlog. Again, it goes into terms of the manner in which we contract, the manner in which we deliberate, how we engage with external parties, and this is something that we also encourage in terms of our state-owned companies to reduce their litigation backlog. Again, linking the issue of capacity to the legal unit in particular to pick up on this the potential dispute between the CEOs and the boards. I think we have acknowledged at this department that some of the issues that we're dealing with they related to human elements. And you rely on your board to provide you information. You rely on your external auditors to be your gatekeepers. So to the extent that we can put all these measures in place, we would also be short of because we are not in the company itself. So we would always get some information that is not adequate. Sometimes it will be late, and sometimes it will be on time when we can be able to deal with it. So our attitude is that constant engagement and open communication, and also with all these forums, because now with the audit and risk audit committee meetings with the minister then can actually hear it from the audit committee members if there are issues. And also then can be able to test those discussions when he's having the discussions with the chairpersons, because then if there's an information asymmetry, then you start wondering that what you've got from the audit committee and what you're receiving from the chair. So those are the kind of mechanics that we've introduced to make sure that we are able to secure information from various sources within the SOCs, but in an open manner. Not that we minister can go to the chair only. It's open. They know these are standing meetings. Okay, then the other insurer issues, I would leave them to Sandile to deal with. But I think the issue also of the waterfront disposal, this is not covered as far as I understand, Sandile, and you can correct me, in our ICM. We restricted ourselves purely to Transnet. I personally am not sure what are the issues around the waterfront to date, but when we looked at the ICM, we were looking purely from the Transnet perspective.
This is a personal member of the person ICM?
Intercoastal management.
Okay.
Then the risk management strategies and the department's measures that we take. What we have done through the dashboard, we have introduced what we call templates on risk management. So again, it relates to how do we manage contracts. We will get a 6 month red flag up front if a contract is to expire. Then we know that we need to engage in negotiations, and what are the terms that we wanted to negotiate. If they are reopeners, what are those that we need to reopen? So we're using the dashboard as a risk management tool around contract management. We're using the dashboard as well as a risk management tool on monitoring of mega projects so that you can deal with your cost overruns. Then it gives you the lines that can flash in terms of if there are escalations in time. And as a matter of fact, we had a workshop yesterday with the state-owned companies where we're introducing new templates on them on the risk management and governance. Then the issues around the audit and risk committee, that whether these committees were not in place before. The audit committees were in place before in terms of the PFMA and even in terms of the old Companies Act. What the new Companies Act has done has elevated the appointment of the audit and risk committee to the shareholder. Now it has to be done by the minister in terms of state-owned companies at the annual general meeting. Also, what the Act has done, it specifies the qualifications of those members. So we're taking advantage of the provisions of the Act now in terms of strengthening our own oversight and ensuring, because then that gives us an opportunity to step into the SOCs and ask in terms of the members of the board, to the extent that minister is the one that appoints, but the people who sit on that committee, vis-a-vis the people who sit on the tender and procurement committee. So we, even in the templates that we have in terms of the dashboard, we have a template that deals with board subcommittees. And again, we've used this act to our advantage now to say, given the fact that you have to split the audit and risk committee, can we do it in respect of the other board members? As a matter of fact, the Companies Act goes to the extent of insisting that the companies appoint a social and ethics committee. We have communicated to our state-owned companies through a letter that we want them to come back to us and tell us the process that they're going to embark on to ensure that they have that committee. The board, independent board evaluation, it is done. It's an external service provider that conducts the board evaluation. It's been a standing item through all the AGMs. What we found was that there was non-compliance. For example, some of the state-owned companies in the last 3 years, they have not conducted the board evaluation. And for us, it was important because when we looked back in the two state-owned companies that had dynamics and challenges between the board and the senior management, they had not conducted even the board evaluation, and then we learned the dynamics within the board itself. Where the SOCs complied, we picked up interesting issues out of the board evaluation because it gave us a sense of what are the dynamics in the board, where there are issues of tension, how issues are deliberated at board subcommittee, how they are taken to the main board, issues of conflict of interest, issues of declaration, how they are dealt with. So it is a very useful tool, which for the 2012 AGM we have already insisted that all the boards must engage in a board evaluation. The department role in ensuring that the SOC employ and appoint the right people, again, we've introduced the CEO appointment guidelines, and this was really influenced by, as I said, that if you look into the private sector in terms of the Companies Act, it sets clear processes in terms of what it would be the role of the board in the appointment of the CEO, what would be the role of the shareholder. But what the Companies Act does not recognize and take into account is that in the public sector, there's cabinet. So the appointment of board and appointment of CEO or ex-officio has to go to cabinet. So the question that faced us as shareholder department was, how do we align and make sure that, yes, there's still prescriptive of the Companies Act in terms of transparency and the right process, but also take into account that in the public space you have got this other board, which is cabinet. So our appointment guidelines are aimed at dealing with that, striking a balance between the Companies Act and the PSMA and also the public service. And then we also look in terms of the CEO and the CFO, and also we do sometimes look in terms of the CEO, the appointment of the COOs, although those they are not shareholder approval, but the board would inform minister in terms of the people that they would be bringing into senior management. Interesting questions around the corporate plan. What is our strategy if the state-owned companies don't comply? Now, we have put, and it's still to be approved by minister, to say what would be then the other alternatives. And, you know, because if you look at the prescript of the PSMA on which this reporting is based, it is not punitive. So you have legislation, but it does not equip the shareholder. But at the same time, we've used it to our advantage to say the fact that the legislation does not entail it doesn't necessarily mean you cannot do it. So as the officials, we are putting recommendations to minister. One of them would be if, to the extent that there's no compliance with the submission of the corporate plan, the process of all the projects, for example, that are contained in the corporate plan that are subject to PSMA approval, then they automatically would not be attended to according to the PSMA prescripts. So you punish the board by saying then it means we cannot approve all these projects, given the fact that this the corporate plan is late, will not follow the day-to-day rule. So you punish them in a sense of not adhering and delaying some of the activities that they need to engage to. It's a a double-edged sword, because then it affects the performance of the company, but also then it will, if the performance of the company is affected, then it means the performance of management is affected when it comes to bonuses. So you say you did not achieve. So, but we're still testing these things. They are not yet with the minister, but it's from the official level to say to what extent then can you link that. I think, Sandile, you can deal with the ICM and the Aventura issue.
Thank you, Chair. Before I deal with the Aventura issues, I just want to add to what my colleague has said about the PFMA and the Companies Act. The PFMA, in fact, the Companies Act does recognize, as she had indicated, the PFMA, and also goes on to provide that the PFMA will prevail in case of any conflict. So we are not worried about if there is any conflict, the PFMA will prevail. On Aventura, I would like to assure the committee that we have been very much clinical with our approach to Aventura wind up because of the challenges that exist in the company. Currently, there is an external audit that is underway, and once that is finalized, which is promised to be finalized by end of this month or first week of March, there will be an AGM or a general meeting that would be called with a view to have a resolution passed to liquidate the company. And once that resolution is taken, then we will be in touch with the office of the master to provide security for small liabilities or indebtedness that does exist. And also then we'll have that lodged with CIPCOM, which is the CIPC, and thereafter we'll have the liquidator appointed and he will come on board and proceed with the winding up. There are certain assets that need to be collected, and thereafter there would be disposal of those and payment of whatever is liable. The liabilities, in fact, are limited to what we owe to what the company owes to a small group of people because it's not operating business. For example, the external auditors, the outsourced functions, and the like. With regard to human capital, there is only the CEO. Who is the employee there, and also an admin officer. The company secretarial functions are outsourced to a company, and there are no people, in fact, in the company as such. So we are not worried that there would be any comebacks with regard to the termination of those contracts, because they are fixed-term contracts anyway, and they only apply to two people or relate to two people. Infraco has been around for quite some time, and we are relentless in terms of trying to get a solution to it. We will be making certain approaches to ICASA. I can only leave it at that and saying at this stage we are trying our best to have the matters resolved, but whenever necessary, we'll also revert to the committee to seek its support. At this stage, we just wanted to point out what the challenges are around that issue. The time frames with regard to Aventura, as I indicated, there is a process, but we are looking at turning around things within, say, 3 months at the most from today. And then one other issue relates to the ICM Act or bill. Yes, it is correct that the coastal property would be held in trust, and it belongs to the people of South Africa, but it would be held in trust by the state. And as to where the bill is right now, it's still within the Department of Environmental Affairs. for comment, and we are informed that it will be soon out for public comment before and thereafter it may be introduced to Parliament. It's not yet introduced, and so it will be out for comment. We are at this point in time, what has happened is that Department and Transnet have made comprehensive comments on the bill, and we are hopeful that they would be taken into account. But if they are not, then and the bill is introduced as it stands, then the process would commence at the Parliament level.
Let me just say, I think what the reason why Dr. Kuranov raises that is that we should not wait when it has to be introduced in Parliament. So if you really wanted the intervention or assistance of this committee, we have to, before it goes there, you know, interact with the portfolio committee, and maybe have a joint meeting with them so that we can discuss the challenges before it goes there. So maybe it would be, it will be helpful if we would know, you know, well before it goes to Parliament. Dr. Purano, did I?
I fully agree. Can I propose that the department, in the meantime, just gives the case of Transnet to our committee without wasting time, so that we can just know what the background is?
Thank you, Chair. No, in fact, Chair, I had touched on all the questions that were asked.
Because these interventions that you talk about must actually, in fact, I think what we need to adopt is the way of doing things when we were busy with the preparations for the soccer tournament, in for us to make sure that we going to execute this ambitious infrastructure rollout that we've set ourselves, and that we are all of us, the whole country, you know, bend all efforts to ensure that we implement that we have set ourselves. So you know, issues of whether your DDGs, you know, whether they do visit these entities, go to these projects and see for themselves. You know, we were very impressed when we went to Durban and, you know, were taken to that pipeline, part of the pipeline. Very impressive project. You know, for us to see, I mean, that's not only yourselves, we will all be doing it, you know. And we will all be saying every year that we are on course, you know, come the 7 years that we have set ourselves, you know, we will deliver, you know, as we have set ourselves. That's why I don't know whether you want us to go to the second round or you just want to comment on it.
I just wanted to add on the issue of Infarco, that I think why we also went to, we leaned more towards this collaboration with Centec at this point in time, is that we also understand that the PRC is looking at that consolidation
part of
is part of that. So we hope they would be able at the right time to assist in terms of how the state looks at its asset in the ICT.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really flowing from the last sentence that the DDG has said. Let me start off with the legislation, Chair. I concur. We can have an informal briefing of legislation. We are allowed as Parliament to have informal briefings. So I think we should do that, and there's obviously nothing wrong to confer with the other committees that might be having. But I think the emphasis must be that this committee is not going to be an afterthought. We either, you know, constructed to have joint public hearings or whatever, but it depends on the content, obviously, of this, the bills that they're talking about. Chair, I think it's going to be important to say to the department or ask the I'm not sure if they did say this, if they gave a time frame of these things. Because in Parliament, if you don't submit legislation at a particular time, then it will just go until the next year and the next year. And I think generally speaking, we don't welcome legislation in November. You can't do much with it unless it's the Scorpion's Bill. But I think, Chair, we must have a sense of a time frame that's been given, because that will help our own program. I just further want to say that, you know, as I listen to the DDG and she talks about the constraints that they have, it is obvious that the department is still trapped, unfortunately, whether it's by their own making. Well, it's not by their own making, by the way. They're still trapped in that which apartheid left them. And, Chair, I would suggest that we can also be proactive in that regard, because it's very difficult when you ask the state to lead, but the state is constrained, both financially and otherwise. I want to suggest, Chair, that I think this is a matter that we should have public hearings on the role of the DPE in a developmental state. Because government asks infrastructure to be rolled out in a big way, but part of the department that must help with it is constrained. So it's not, you know, it's, yeah, look, I think we must, because we hear this all the time since last year, they've been telling us about these constraints. Sure, that's the power that we have as the legislature to do this thing. But there's nothing wrong if we do agree that we should do that, Chair. There's nothing wrong for us to ourselves visit other legislation. You see, government has put up the PRC. The government didn't say to the legislature, you stop everything until the PRC. Government is, in fact, expecting that the legislature is also complementing and adding to what it would want to achieve. So, Chair, I want to suggest that we ourselves also go and visit some other legislation on entities, because there are in the other committees that there was a very tight relationship between reporting to the minister, and there's an act. There's a particular, if you take the water boards, it's very clear the Water Services Act spells out to the detail even about the appointment. And there are lessons like that can be learned, and I'm sure there are very many other ones. So I want to ask that we do that, Chair. I also want to ask that that together with other government institutions, that we ourselves should do this thing. This thing of Infraco, you would remember, Chair, when we were there and we listened to the person that was, I mean, he was very passionate and so on, and he gave us a good insight. But when we asked him the crunch question on, well, what are the changes in the community about, because this broadband is about making sure that we have better education, we have improvement in our health and all of that, we couldn't find the connection. Now, we can't ask for the Presidential Review Committee to go and find the connection of improving services there. That's my understanding. In the main, that act is about that thing. So that's the other reason why I'm saying I think we've got to be a bit proactive here ourselves, and see if we can't come up with something ourselves in this regard, Chair. I also lastly want to say that there's a case to be made on CENTEC to have a joint meeting also with communications, and I think there's a long list of other committees that we should meet on also on similar issues, whether it's the Transport Committee, the Water and Environment Committee. on this one. I think it's also expectant from us to see how we can assist if there is still any impasse. It doesn't sound like it is as hot as it was last year or the year before on the Centec, the license issue. Does look like the temperature has come down a bit, but I think we haven't met our objective yet in this regard, and that's why I would want to ask Chair. I think we should have a conversation with the Communications Committee. I thank you very much.
Chairperson, taking the cue from Honorable September and using the metaphor of turning up the heat on the FACO, I think we must turn up the heat on Transnet in respect of this 8.4 billion rand financial day back. Now, the relevance of this is that in terms of your mandate, DDG Matsi and Sandy, you have clearly said that there is no legislative framework within which you are operating. You are waiting for a proclamation, and of course the ideal mode situation would be the presidential review, the PRC recommendations. Now, currently it means there is double oversight. You, as the DP, are exercising oversight over these eight SOCs. We are also exercising oversight over yourselves and the SOCs. Now, Transnet, when they presented here, shocked us by saying that there was this 8.4 billion financial day back. Now, I cannot for the life of me how that can be swept under the carpet. Now, DG Matsie, you are responsible, among others, for risk management now, and I'm not going to accuse you because you're a very capable person, but how far-reaching is this risk management, or your risk management tentacles, and how did this escape your risk management protocol? Because 8.4 billion is actually 8.4 billion. Now, we know at the end of this year there's going to be an annual report that's going to be presented to us, which we're going to debate and take to Parliament. And how do we liberate ourselves from this 8.4 billion? And akin to that is the small one of S-Express. Well, but when there's a forensic audit. Now, in terms of oversight, how do we liberate ourselves as politicians and yourselves as DPE from this financial day back?
Thank you. A very hot last question.
Actually, I know that the department has been assigned, I mean, SOEs, SOCs, because we no longer use SOEs. SOCs, such as Transnet and ESCOM, actually have been very central to this infrastructural development that we're talking about. I just wanted to check the department's role in ensuring that, because these are huge amounts of money that are going to be used today, I just wanted to check with the department whether it is their role to ensure that the SOCs are well capacitated to handle those huge amounts of money. Because without the capacity of those managers there, I foresee it's going to be a pipe dream. We need people who are going to handle these monies. Okay. So I wanted to check with the department if they are capacitating those SOCs. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, on the issue of the department risk management tools and how robust they are to make sure that we are aware and manage and avoid financial mismanagement within the state-owned companies. And it is linked with the last question, again, in terms of ensuring SOC capacity. I think first and foremost is as a department, when you've got the board, then you put them in with clear instructions in terms of what the expectation is from the minister, the shareholder. Then you've got your auditors. And I think what we've picked with an analysis is that these gaps, you could not apportion blame to one part of the organization. The SOCs were let down to some extent by the management within the organization. The things that the board could have done better and well that they did not do. The things that the auditors, in terms of performing their audit function, should have done and should have picked, were not picked. And then it came to us as the department in terms of also doing the analysis that we rely on this team, and it becomes very difficult then to start apportioning blame when you yourself, even in the department, we could have done certain things that we did not do. So the essence of that analysis of the 2010-2011 process, audit process, was to say, who are the role players, what is expected from which party, and how are we going to make sure that all of us play their part. So, the SAX and the Transnet 8.4 billion are lapses in the SOCs insofar as governance and financial management is concerned. And hence we say now, in terms of managing the build and managing the approvals, we have improved on the significance and materiality thresholds now of the department. We have improved on the quantitative and qualitative measures that we put in the SMF. But also maybe what one needs to say is that you also sit also with a risk of accusation from either being the public itself, business, and even the SOCs, that the shareholder is too much into our face. But because we believe that there are triggers, when certain things happen, they give us the right as a shareholder to go in. So I think it is something that with time we'll be able to handle. But I believe that we've started the right processes. We have started engaging with the boards. We've started communicating clearly. And we are there spending time with the SOCs through different forums to make sure that they know that we are watching.
Sorry, Chair, if I can just also add on the risk issue. There is a very big a component of risk management plan that goes into the corporate plan. And our approach is now that we are going to be robust in terms of assessing that risk management plan, ensure that it includes all the components of their business. Over and above that, when we review transactions in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, our approach has changed in the sense that we bring in the risk element in terms of assessing those transactions and also advising the SOVs or SOCs. Thank you, Chair.
But how do you recover the money?
We're looking at Lobex.
that you want the committee to assist us. I think you were with us when we were going through the brr over the weekend. So we must start preparing our motivations for whatever it is that we would like to see in our brr. So if you can just do that for us. Okay. Thank you so much. And this part of our meeting is adjourned, or it's just ended. We will wait a minute. I think in future it will be appreciated if we get them in time, so that we don't have to see them here for the first time. Whilst we are distributing the minutes, members, there's an invitation here from the Portfolio Committee of Mineral Resources. Inviting us to a joint Portfolio Committee meeting on the 7th. And it is about a follow-up, actually, on an oversight visit they undertook to Alexco. And next week Wednesday, yes. They say here that they came across an entity there called the Alexco Development Foundation during their visit, and they want Alexco and this foundation to give some information to the committee. That is the structure, the audited financial statements and its operations, and they think it is very important that we a part of this meeting where this will be. And I think it is a very important meeting. Mr. Mayor, Honorable Mayor.
Now, I just want to state that Trust Fund has been before the Mineral Resources Committee 3 times already,
yes.
And they was actually asked for the final one. So,
this is the final.
I suppose.
Okay. Okay. It's at, Yitang will send you all the information, the notice. It's the Yes, Wednesday morning. That's the 7th. Venue is V454. That's the fourth floor of the old assembly wing. 9 o'clock. And well, obviously, Honorable Sonto and Honorable Hololo will be there because they are very strong activists of the economic transformation. you will be there. That's in a way. Oh, okay. What's that? Honorable Gloria will be there. Honorable Mukwena will be there. Honorable Sonto will lead the delegation. Okay, so you'll be double there. Okay, shall we quickly go through the minutes? And these are the minutes of the 14th of February and the 21st of February. What I would suggest we do, unless we want 5 or 10 minutes to go through this quickly, Honorable September? Yes, ma'am.
resolution in this committee already that we need to have them beforehand. We leave this. I'm not sure why we can't have adherence to the decision of the committee. Why are we going to sit here page by page, look for question marks and whether the dots and cross the T's? It's unfair. We can't do this to members. I suggest we dump this until such time we get it beforehand, and then we can engage with minutes.
So will this mean the consideration of this minutes will stand over to the next meeting then? But, Jisan, please, as Honorable September says, we have agreed on the time as distribution of the minutes to members, so that we avoid this. The meeting is adjourned, and thank you so much for attending, members, and your invaluable inputs. Jisan, so Urotai Sota Aude. So that's pretty powerful. That's the missing up.